How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Welcome here to the Lakers Lounge. I am Anthony Irwin. We're hours away. We're 6 hours away, basically, less than 6 hours away from free agency officially being underway for the NBA, for the National Basketball Association, for the Los Angeles Lakers. Well, take that back, not really for the Los Angeles Lakers. They aren't really meeting with anybody. I am doing right now more than what the Lakers are doing with either Kevin Durant or Hassan Whiteside. I am talking via Skype to a couple people. Harrison Fagan, as always, and then today, Tom Fear. It's been a while. How are you holding up? How's life?
Life's pretty good, man. I've been wanting to come back on the podcast, but like the Lakers, I just couldn't get a meeting.
That was solid work. You know, it was almost like your voice kind of cracked a little bit there.
He's been in acting school the whole time he's been gone from the podcast.
Yep. He finally graduated, and we let him back on the show. I didn't think my demands were that incredible.
Got to have a degree to be on this show, or just lie about it like I do.
So, all right, let's just go ahead and jump into it, because there's a lot going on, or not really going on, but there not being anything going on is actually still news for the Lakers this time of year. We'll just start with this Kevin Durant not wanting to meet with the Lakers tidbit. And for me, it was kind of, honestly, it was funny to hear Ramona Shelburne, who does great work. I want this as a caveat on the front end. She's very good at her job, but I couldn't help but laugh at the idea that, out of respect, Kevin Durant owes the Lakers a meeting. And it's just, the premise is funny to me. I don't think there's any more elitist way to look at an organization. And if this is something that's coming from the Lakers that is kind of being expounded upon by Shelburne, then no wonder they can't get anybody in a room. I wouldn't want to talk to those guys.
Was she saying that the Lakers deserved one out of respect, or that she was surprised they couldn't get one out of respect?
It was something along the lines of, the full logic isn't completely terrible, because she was mostly saying that it's just bad business. Why wouldn't you just take a quick meeting with any team, even if you can just say, hey, I'm not really interested right now. Maybe he signs a one-year deal, and next year the Lakers make a crazy trade and he wants to go back there. Like, the Lakers shouldn't want to feel slighted. But by that logic, I mean, you could argue you should take a meeting with all 30 NBA teams that are interested in talking to you. So it didn't really make sense. But she did say that, like, oh, especially the Knicks and Lakers, man, they deserve those out of respect. And I was just like, no.
Oh, I missed that one.
I
don't really agree with that logic, because I honestly, he's kind of doing them a favor. Like, if he's positive he's not going to sign there, like, why waste their time, you know? Yep. It's like I'm not thankful that all the girls that I've asked out over the years gave me the chance to get rejected by them, like, you know.
And somebody just tweeted out, I forget who it is, and I can't really scroll through my timeline right now, but it's really nice of Nicholas Batum to break up with the Lakers on the phone versus just via text, or just not even meeting with them, right? Because it's hard to see the Lakers really getting a shot at Nicholas Batum, but I guess they get to have a conversation with him. Now, the other, I guess the flip side, or the extension of the logic that Ramona is kind of introducing, is Kevin Durant is rep by an agent. And that agent has other clients. And if Kevin Durant is going to spurn the Lakers so publicly and so, for lack of a better term, embarrassingly, that agent is going to feel it when he has other clients that he wants the Lakers to throw a bone to. And they're going to say, well, wait a tick. It was your job to point Durant in our direction, or at least tell Durant, don't embarrass the Lakers. And in that respect, that's where Kevin Durant, or I'm not going to keep on saying Kevin Durant. That's where Durant puts his agent in an awkward situation, because the agent stands to benefit from, you know, just cooperation. Right? Am I thinking too much into that, or is...
No, that's fair logic, but I mean, I think we're just thinking too much into it. If Durant was never going to come to the Lakers, there's not any reason that he should be giving them a meeting, and there's no reason he should feel obligated to.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I don't think there's an issue here. I mean, I think we all knew Durant was never going to come to the Lakers. LeBron was never going to come to the Lakers. All those people that were hoping for the giant big fish that was going to come to the Lakers in free agency and turn the whole thing around, I feel like we're always suffering a bit of delusion of grandeur, and that the way it was always going to happen was the way it's currently happening, which is rebuilding through the draft and making smart moves.
Yeah, and to that point even, go ahead, Harrison.
So I was just going to say, as far as the agent thing goes and them having other clients they need to get signed, that's going to depend on the talent level of the client. If it's like an end-of-the-bench guy that they're kind of begging on and like trying to get that dude a roster spot, then yeah, that might make a difference. But if it's a talented player, the Lakers aren't going to be like, no, we're not going to sign this talented player because you couldn't get Kevin Durant a meeting with us. And if they are, then they deserve to lose out on that talented player.
No, I don't. You know? I don't think it would. I don't think it's a function, or it would be a situation in which they'd say we aren't going to sign somebody because you didn't get Kevin Durant to not take a meeting.
Well, then I don't get what the downside is.
What I'm saying is, if it's like a middling free agent, that, you know, because all kinds of free agents are tied to the Lakers at this time of year, right?
Every free agent.
Every single one, and it's for a reason, right? It's for a reason. It helps set some kind of market for that free agent. And if the Lakers start saying to these agents, you don't get to pull that crap, you know, then that agent is now hurting for the leverage that he might have had otherwise with his other clients, right? And that's across the board. Yes, if it's a very talented free agent, then the Lakers probably should have been tied to that player anyway, that hypothetical player anyway. But for the type of free agent who would need a little bump in leverage, that's where the Lakers stand to benefit that client. The other meeting here, and we'll kind of steer this in another direction, the weird free agent who didn't get a meeting or didn't offer the Lakers a meeting is Hassan Whiteside, which you would think the fit made a lot of sense. Whiteside would have liked all the money and the fame would have come in Los Angeles, but he's not even meeting with them. It's the Dallas Mavericks, the Portland Trail Blazers, and obviously the Miami Heat. When that news came across the timeline, Tom, how did you take that?
I took it fine. I mean, I was a little surprised. All indications that I had seen would suggest that he probably would have taken that meeting, but I'm not as high on Whiteside as a lot of people. I would have been in favor of going after him, mostly just because my stance on free agency. At this point, the Lakers rebuild is talent, and if you can acquire some right now without having to give anything up other than money, then go for it and deal with it later. But I have a lot of concerns with this guy. First of all, he's not even that young anymore. He's 27 years old,
mm-hmm.
and there were a lot of concerns in Miami about his character and whether he was just stat chasing, and there's data that would suggest that his actual team impact is a lot worse than his box score numbers. So I was fine with it. It would have been cool to have him because he would be able to dunk things a lot and block things a lot, which helps. but I'm fine with it.
Harrison, were you? I was surprised by the news that there wasn't a meeting scheduled or even a phone call like there is in Batum's case. Did you? I mean, when you saw that tidbit, I saw that your preview beyond, you know, what is it? It's not the byline. What's the second line that's in italics or whatever?
Subheader.
It was just the subheader was whelp.
Yeah.
So that gives a nice taste of where your mind seemed to be, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty shocked that he wasn't even going to meet with them. I mean, there were all these rumors that they were going to chase him hard and all of this stuff, and to not even be able to get a meeting with him and to have him be, like, completely not interested if he's not going to give them a meeting, and there's nothing to say that couldn't change. Like, they might get a meeting at some point, but it is pretty surprising that a guy like that seems to enjoy yeah, kind of being famous. He enjoys having a lot of fans. He's big on his Snapchat and social media and all that stuff. And he seems to like the spotlight, and you'd think that L.A. would kind of appeal to him for all those reasons, not to mention that they have kind of an attractive young roster, and he's not that old. Like, he's 27, so he's not young, but he's not old enough to where it's like, okay, if I use a year rebuilding with these guys, then I'm never going to be able to win again. He's still relatively young, and he's such a good fit that you'd think that he'd at least kind of give them a sit-down, even if he didn't think it was going to be a great chance, but he'd give them a chance to try and pitch him.
Right. That's the weird thing to me is that, and I guess technically speaking, Whiteside wants to get free agency figured out as soon as possible, right? And the more meetings, the longer that takes, that decision takes. Now, personally, I wouldn't want to rush this kind of decision. It's one of the bigger decisions he's going to make in his life.
He says he wants to have it on July 1st.
Right? Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be on a team, I swear. That's kind of an interesting way to go about such an important decision, like I said. And the Lakers...
His desire also, though, to just real quick aside, but his desire to move quickly might be a little bit of overstated and kind of more of a leverage ploy to Miami to let them know, like, hey, I'm not going to wait around forever while you figure out if you have a real chance at Kevin Durant or, you know, while you figure out your money with Dwayne Wade. Like, I want my money and I want it now. I want to be your number one priority. So some of that might be playing the leverage game a little bit.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's... Those are both very, very fine points and valid points. But what I would be concerned about for the Lakers is, what the heck is going on here? Like, at what point do they take a look at this and say, all right, something that we're doing isn't working, and one of those things that might not be working, and it's something that we brought up on the last show, one of the things that might not be helping are potentially siblings taking shots at each other while they're owners of the Los Angeles Lakers. Tom, do you think the reports that Kevin Ding wrote in his most recent column about the Lakers have anything to do with the situation the Lakers find themselves in right now?
No, I don't. I don't really think Hassan Whiteside cares about what Jeannie and Jim Buss say to each other in public or anything of that sort. I think what might have a bigger impact is the fact that the Lakers have been bad. Having Byron Scott as your coach for those years, it can have an impact that is negative in the long term, is that people will look at the Lakers. Sure, they have some young pieces they could build around, but if they can get the same money elsewhere and they are interested in winning basketball games, they're going to say no thanks. And that's what's been happening year after year lately with the Lakers. I think it'll probably continue to happen for a little while.
Until the kids develop, I'm guessing, right? Until those, if hopefully yeah. The kids will develop and they'll become players that other guys will want to play with.
Right,
I don't
your
know.
Two big pieces right now are a 19-year-old and an 18-year-old. It's not like people want to sign up to go play with that team.
I guess for me, it's hard for me to not think that on some level these free agents are looking at the organization and saying, well, where's the stability coming from, right? Where's the culture coming from? And yes, on that point, or to that point, you want the kids to be able to develop and instill their own culture in themselves and winning culture by themselves, which is pretty rare. You don't really see that very often. You'd want to see it from a head coach, but the head coach that's coming over is going to be a first-time head coach. And then lastly, you would want to see it at the ownership level, and that's where I get a little concerned that, like you said, Harrison, these are things that people know throughout the league, that, you know, going into these meetings, people know that the Buss siblings don't necessarily like each other, and that's fine. There are corporations and there are businesses that have functioned in the past in which, you know, key components of it don't necessarily like each other personally. But what I don't think there are very many examples of are corporations that have succeeded while people at the very top of the organization have tried outwardly to get each other fired to certain extents, or at least one half seems to be doing her damnedest to make that kind of thing happen.
Yeah,
I take your point. And I don't think it. Sorry, I was just gonna say I don't think it's helping, but at the same time, I don't think that's going to be a deciding factor. For example, Hassan Whiteside not taking a meeting with them.
Mm-hmm. I disagree from this perspective, and I've said this a couple times, but I think that it is a worry to some of these guys that, and maybe not so much the infighting amongst the owners as the very public deadline for the president of basketball operations to get this thing back within 1 year or lose his job. So guys are, it's like last summer where guys were like, okay, Kobe's going to be gone in a year. The team's going to look completely different. Why do I want to sign on for kind of this circus year? And so this year, it's almost like at the end of the summer, you have waiting. It's like, is the guy who brought me in going to be gone at the end of this summer if we don't meet a certain performance goal? Is he going to be fired or let go or whatever? And who's going to be running the team? What's their agenda? How do I fit into their agenda? Are they just going to trade me 1 year into a 5-year deal to somewhere I don't even want to be? You know? And mm-hmm. So I think that that would be something that would be concerning, at least for me. I know, like me personally, if I was signing on to a job somewhere, I would want to know that, in 1 year, I wasn't going to get moved to go right in Milwaukee or something.
Like, right. Well, and even to that point, when you're talking about potential jobs that you would want to take, is I don't know if I'd want to take a job, and there are you know some jobs out there, and I've taken jobs out there where you knew, as I was taking the job, that there was a chance that the owner of the business was going to, you know, could potentially hurt the business as a whole, and making that decision kind of bit me in the long run. And if I'm a free agent and the owners and the people who are the final say-so on all this stuff, if they are so unstable, and in this case, self-destructive, right, where owners not being able to get along and put the best interests ahead of their own personal interests, that's not a situation that you're ever going to find success in. So if I'm a free agent, I'm saying, you know what, there's no way to beat bad ownership. I'm just going to go ahead and move on to somebody who may or may not have a more secure spot in place. We have humongous breaking news right now. This is scrolling across my Twitter timeline, and it's going to be all a buzz. Al Horford just followed Kevin Durant on Twitter. Holy moly.
That's something really happened.
Breaking news. But before we get into that, and if they're possibly interested in teaming up together, I do think that before we kind of move on, we have to consider a possibility that we've maybe overlooked. Like, the Lakers aren't getting these meetings with these guys, and it does seem kind of weird. You know, we know that D'Angelo Russell is kind of a notorious prankster. Is there a chance, is there at least a small chance that maybe he went into the Lakers' phone directories and changed all the phone numbers by one digit, and they're just getting busy signals from all these guys' agents? Or, like, maybe he put in his own phone number for, like, Hassan Whitesides and is doing his best impression on the phone. Yeah, I'll meet with you. And so the Lakers are like, yeah, of course we're going to meet with Whiteside and Durant and whatever, and they're going to show up, and it's going to be Russell in a Durant jersey. And, like, punked.
that's it for sure. That makes just as much sense as people thinking that Al Horford following Kevin Durant means they're almost definitely playing next year.
What if Kevin Durant DMs him now? Like that, then all of a sudden, like that's how they figure out. That's how they're going to figure out their free agency. It's not like they could do that in a less public way. It's definitely Al Horford. He's about to tweet at Durant like, "Hey, DM me. I have a business proposition."
Right. Right. So, anything else to add on Whiteside and Durant, neither of them taking a meeting with the Lakers and what it might mean moving forward?
I think Tom has a good point. It just, I think we've all kind of, like, the Lakers are terrible right now. They aren't that appealing to free, and they're like, their players are young, and guys don't want to sign on for a rebuilding effort. So I think that kind of leads us into our next thing, where maybe the Lakers should be looking past these superstar, big-name, top-of-the-market guys, and they should be looking at more supplemental players, right?
Yeah,
I would. Sorry, I was just saying, I would make sure a max offer sheet is in Al Horford's hands if he's even willing to listen, but I wouldn't expect that to be a reasonable get. But yeah, other than that, I would start looking at Nicholas Batum and I would start looking at Chandler Parsons.
That's a great segue, Tom. Way to go. Speaking
That's
of
what I'm here for, man. I'm just here to tee you up, Anthony.
Nicholas Batum is, I think, the odds-on favorite to return to Charlotte, right? That's almost how everybody involved in the situation sees this playing out. But he is willing to at least listen to the Lakers, unlike the last two guys we were talking about. So if you're the Lakers, Harrison, we'll start with you here, and I'm putting you on the spot. But if you're the Lakers, what's the selling point to Batum that makes him leave Charlotte? And the obvious is that it's Los Angeles and not Charlotte.
Yeah, I think that they've mentioned kind of their selling points to guys. It's the location. It's the kind of, it's the exciting young players that you have a chance to grow with and contribute to the development to and be a little bit better than last year. It's the new head coach who's coming off of his much heralded, what was it, 49-4 head coaching stint to start the season with the Warriors. And it's cap space to add other contributors. Because really, if they get one big guy to commit, then all of a sudden, it's a more appealing destination for other guys.
More than that, I think you can make a pretty good pitch to Batum that, like, and this depends on the type of personality he has. I can't speak for this, but you can say, hey, we want you to come in and be the leader for these young guys. We know that you're a good player. You're a good offensive player. He had 6 assists a game this year as a small forward that primarily doesn't play on the ball. That's pretty remarkable, and I think that's a guy that Luke Walton would be able to trust and run a lot of things through. And so he would be a very good veteran to add to this team, and I think they can try and pitch him on taking on a leadership role as well.
It's kind of funny that we look at Batum, who is 27, as a veteran, and yeah, Hassan Whiteside,
exactly. Hassan 27,
has an upside signing at 27 at the same age. So it's kind of funny how that kind of plays out. How about from a basketball?
Listen to their interviews, and you'll figure out why that's kind of the common opinion.
Fair point. But Tom, from a basketball standpoint, Batum is a very good, and you talked about his passing ability. He's a very good defender. How would you make the rotations work if the Lakers were able to entice him over to Los Angeles?
I would make – well, I mean, whether shooting guard or small forward doesn't really matter. I would start Ingram and Batum at the wings, and I would make Clarkson the sixth man. I've said for a while I think that's Clarkson's most natural long-term role. He doesn't – he's not going to be your point guard when you have D'Angelo Russell on the team, and he doesn't quite fit at shooting guard, though you can make it work, and he'll be able to play shooting guard at times, but I think his best role is combo guard, six man off the bench.
I really like that idea too, because I think that it takes a lot of pressure off of Ingram next year to immediately defend the best player that the Lakers are playing, and I think that he'll be able to get a lot of confidence from defending the second best player, and he'll have a better chance for success doing that. And then I also think that if you're my initial thought was, okay, you bring Ingram off the bench and you let him go against bench players, but who are the Lakers going to have on their bench? It's probably not going to be that threatening of guys, and so it would really – the focus would be on Ingram to create a lot of offense by himself, which I think he's going to be 19 by the time the season starts, but still, like, that's a lot of pressure to put on him. And so if you have him in the starting lineup, he gets to be a little bit more of a supplementary player, and –
All right, hold on. My cat is effing dying right now.
I was like, did Anthony get a child? What is happening here?
Whereas Clarkson is in his third year, and he's going to be able to – I agree with Tom. I think that he'll thrive in that six-man role. I think being allowed to dominate the ball against second units, I think that he'll be really good at that. So I 100% agree.
Yeah, and the other thing that is nice with Batum is that you can play him at the 2, 3, or even 4 spot, depending on who you're playing against. So the lineup possibilities, and this is the same thing we can say about Chandler Parsons, although he's going to be less successful, I would say, at the 2 than Batum would be.
Chandler Parsons can't play the 2. He's almost 6'11", isn't he?
I don't think he's that tall.
He's like 6'10", I think. I don't think he could play the 2.
I think Ingram can play the 2.
Ingram can play the 2.
But what I mean, though, is that with Batum, he offers a lot of versatility, and what I'd be kind of interested to see is the Lakers go to a pretty positionless system with Luke Walton, that you just kind of find your spot on the court regardless of whatever title you might hold on it, and kind of make it work from there going forward. I guess we'll just briefly hit on Parsons, who the Lakers are also interested in. Parsons, a very good spot-up three-point shooter. He is not the defender that Batum is, and I don't believe he's the passer that Batum is. But Harrison, would you be okay with Parsons as a potential signing?
His injury history scares me a lot, and I think that because of that history, he's going to be better as kind of playing a lot of four long-term, which is the position the Lakers are deepest at. And so I don't know that I love his. I don't know that I love signing him. He'd be a good get for the Lakers because they need talent. And so I definitely wouldn't be against it as like it, say if I were the GM and that was kind of my option, was sign Parsons or sign like Harrison Barnes or something. I would probably go Parsons, but because I think he's better. But he wouldn't be my first option. No. The injury history is a little worrying.
I think at this point in the conversation, I don't think we're really talking about any first options, right? So
yeah, I just he's fine. Like, I think he'd be a decent fit, but it's not that great. And the injury history is a little bit worrying for a guy you're about to give a long-term contract to.
Tom, same question.
I'm higher on Parsons than it sounds like Harrison is. I mean, injury concerns are always valid, but I mean, he's never had a year where he played, what is it, less than 61 games. So, I mean, it's not like he's been out for long stretches of time. But, I think he's a pretty solid defender, and I think he's a good shooter. I think he's athletic. I think he would fit pretty well as another wing alongside Ingram. So I'd be pretty happy if the Lakers brought him on. But, I mostly have the stance of talent is talent. So if they can get one of these guys, get it. I'm not going to sit around hoping that one of the big fish is going to land in the Lakers' lap when they aren't. So I'd be fine with – I'd love Batum. I would really like Parsons. I would really like DeRozan, even though it sounds like he's staying in Toronto. I'd be down for any of these
Lakers
guys.
Actually got a meeting with him, though.
Did they? I haven't heard that.
There were reports that they were going to actually – they were going to get a meeting with him.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I actually agree here with Tom. And this is the thing that I've been kind of – laughing about when it comes to people's analysis on Twitter about what the Lakers can and cannot or should not do, is this idea of fit on a team that is coming off of 17 wins. Like, you would think, yes, you have D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram, who are probably pretty close to untouchable moving forward in terms of being trade assets. But aside from that, I don't really see anybody on the roster who I would be out and out inconsolable about the Lakers. You know, if I were to find out that the Lakers traded any of those guys to improve their roster, and if that's the case, and you can acquire anybody who could potentially just make the Lakers better by overall talent on their roster, I don't really have a problem with it. And I thought, Tom, you said something that was interesting. It kind of caught my eye. In a conversation with, I believe it was Kirk Henderson, on Twitter, when he asked why you like DeMar DeRozan despite his shooting struggles, and you put it pretty bluntly, and I couldn't believe that I didn't think of it to this point, but you said something along the lines of, he's good at a lot of other things, he's just not as good at shooting, just like any other free agent signing, especially in this market, because the market right now isn't. You know, you're not signing a bunch of Kevin Durants. It's not like those guys are all available. So he's right. Just everybody has their shortcomings, and he just happens to have one that seems a little bit more glaring than others.
Right, and I mean, like, I feel like people are thinking too much about, oh, well, does this guy shoot too many contested mid-range jumpers? Yes, he does, but he's really good at basketball. It's like he was the second best player on the Raptors, who were the second best team in the East this year. Is that saying that he's a perennial all-star? No, not necessarily, but he's good. The Lakers need good players, and they can, if there's a problem, they can deal with it later.
Right, and you know, because I had somebody in my mentions, because late-ish last night, there were reports about the Lakers, wow, did you guys hear that Canadian come out to me? there were reports of the Lakers becoming interested in Mike Conley, and the response, as I kind of knew was going to happen after I wrote the article, was, well, wait, the Lakers have D'Angelo Russell, they have Jordan Clarkson, it looks like their backcourt of the future is set, but neither of those guys are going to play 48 minutes a game. And both guys can play off the ball to certain extents. You get talent, and then you try to make
it. And so can Conley a little bit. Like, Conley's a very, very good point guard, but he can also shoot. Like, he could space the floor at times.
Right. So I'm of the opinion that you get good basketball players, and you make it work. That's it. You know?
Yeah, I agree. And even that one would be one that makes me think of it. I would still take him, but... Yeah, no, like, I do want the ball in D'Angelo Russell's hand. I do want him to be a point guard. And I've said for a while, especially when D'Angelo was coming out of the draft, I thought that his potential outlook was sort of like a mix halfway, not saying he'll reach this level, but like a mix halfway between Mike Conley and Steph. It's like sort of a hybrid. He's not quite as explosive or as great of a shooter as Steph, but he does some things that are a little bit like Conley. I really like Conley as a player. He's really solid. I would take him on the Lakers. The initial instinct, of course, is to say, I want the ball in D'Angelo's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Except for if you're one of those crazy people that hates him because of the whole Nick Young thing.
They've been in
which
my
we can talk about later. There's been some interesting developments in that. I don't know if you
guys
remember.
Man, I can't believe D'Angelo Russell put security cameras all over
Nick
Young's house.
He's such a snitch. He put security cameras in his house, and he just told everyone that Nick Young was bringing all those women back to his house. Oh, God, what a jerk.
and got Nick Young's baby mama pregnant. Like, that's
the whole thing. He made sure that she got pregnant that night, just so Iggy would find out.
That little prankster.
Yeah, I don't understand that whole, calling him a snitch in the first place was stupid, and that argument has just looked dumber as time has gone on, and we're finding out that Nick Young, turns out, is not, somebody who calls himself Swaggy P, is not husband material. Like, I can't believe we found that out. That's insane.
I can't, because following Nick Young for all his career,
not prepared for
perfect.
I agree with both of what you just said. So, see, if you guys are going to have to listen to that a few times over to hear what they both said. But that was really
cool. That's okay.
All right, so we'll just kind of – there's going to be plenty to talk about. We're probably going to have these podcasts pretty often as free agency goes forward, and I promise, Tom, we'll give you the invite more often now that you've graduated your acting class. But let's go into predictions as to directions that the Lakers might go in, the type of player they might be interested in. And if you want to get into specific names, we can do that as well. Who's willing and able to go first?
I guess I can go. I think they're gonna end up adding. At this point, it doesn't really look like it's gonna be Whiteside, but they obviously have to get a center. I don't think Ivica Zubac is ready to play 48 minutes a game, or maybe even 15 minutes a game. Like, we're gonna have to see where he's at when he comes over. Hopefully for summer league, but probably by the preseason, I would imagine. He might be able to play some type of role, but they need a guy at that five spot, and so I could see them definitely grabbing a guy like Biombo, a guy like Azili, one of these kind of maybe not even necessarily that much cheaper than Whiteside options, but kind of second-tier options compared to him on the free agent market at center, because they have to get a major contributor there. So they might be the team that ends up, quote-unquote, overpaying for one of those guys. And they need some help on the wing for sure. And so I don't know that they're going to end. I highly doubt they're getting Batum. So I think, again, it's going to be like or really DeRozan or any of those kind of big name guys. I think they're going to get supplementary depth that's going to either play alongside or behind Ingram to start with, because they need more depth of three position.
I will say with Batum, there's one thing that's going to Lakers' favor, and it's not like they're competing with the Warriors and the Cavs and the Raptors for him. He's listening to, if I believe I'm remembering this correctly, the Hornets, the Knicks, the Wizards, and the Mavericks.
Oh, good lord. The Lakers actually have a chance.
Yeah, so that's what, and there's been some stuff that would suggest he might just be more likely just to stay in Charlotte, which is fine, yeah. But I'm not completely giving up on that, but I've also learned not to get my expectations too high, so I'll say Festus Ezeli is their biggest free agent signing this year. I would be down for either him or Biombo. I think the Luke Walton connection might steer the Lakers more towards him than Biombo.
Or maybe steer them away after the finals. I know Golden State's coaching staff, I think people have written about it, were really unhappy with Ezeli after that finals. So, well, yeah.
I did not know that. So then maybe Biombo. I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was written about. I think it might have been low. I don't remember. I read that somewhere. But there was that. But I remember earlier this year there was Mo Spates on Snapchat was joking that Ezeli and Barnes were future Lakers, and it looks like we might be heading towards that scenario.
I mean, that's the other name that we haven't brought up is Harrison
Barnes.
Let's
talk about that real quick.
Okay, go.
Well, and I was just like, what do you guys think? It seems like Twitter loves to trash Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, Twitter goes too far on Harrison Barnes.
I don't quite get it.
I'm not
like,
a huge fan, but...
Yeah, but like he's fine. He can shoot. He can guard. He can do some things. I don't want him as a number one option on any team, but like he's a capable wing, which the Lakers could use.
My thing with Barnes is, and I'd have to look up his age again too. But my thing with Barnes is, I don't think we really know what he is as of right now because of the team he's been playing on. Right, like. No, he's not going to have incredible counting stats when the counting stats are being taken by Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala when they're in the game. Like his job is basically, hey Harrison, go stand in the corner, and on those occasions where we need you, where we absolutely need you to make something happen, we really hope you come through there. And I don't really think that's a fair situation in which you can judge what a player actually brings to a team. And even to that point, somebody made a really good point. I forget who it was. I want to say it was Marcus Thompson.
Doesn't matter. Just steal it.
It was your point, Anthony.
I said it. I was really smart when I said it, too. But he said basically that, you know, Harrison Barnes' no-showing later in that series showed exactly how vital he is or somebody is to play that role to levels of efficiency better than he was in those games. And for the Lakers, I'm kind of looking at, look, they need wing athleticism, check. They need somebody who's been in winning situations before, check. That'd be nice. The icing on the cake is that he would be coming over with Luke Walton to help instill some of those, some of the system that Walton is bringing from Golden State. And all of those boxes are checked. And at the end of the day, Twitter is, in and of itself, a echo chamber that people just try to scream louder about. And in this case with Harrison Barnes, like you guys said, hey, Twitter just goes way too far on a guy that I think is a skilled talent, you know, is a talented basketball player.
Well, can I give one reason that I don't think that he would be a good signing?
Yes.
What?
I really don't want to have to be confused every single time I'm scrolling through my Twitter timeline for the next 4 years whether or not people are mad at me or they're mad at Harrison Barnes. That's going to cause me to waste so much time doing double takes scrolling through my timeline. So
it's all about Harrison. It remains all about Harrison.
So to answer your earlier question, Anthony, he just turned 24 years old. So,
yeah,
I mean, he's young. He has decent upside, I think. He played let's look at this simply for a second. I know you can poke holes in this, but he played 31 minutes a game on a 73-win team. It's not like he's a bum.
Right. Right. If he was bad, they wouldn't have put him in. They wouldn't have carved out that well, they didn't really carve out a spot for him there, but he played a vital role on a really, really good team. The best.
Yeah, he started for them, and he played in their best lineup. He was a huge part of how they're able to play the death lineup because
exactly.
He could defend fours.
In back-to-back seasons, last year he shot 40.5% from three, and this year he shot 38.3% from three. That's really good. We could use that.
Yeah, right. That'll drop off a little bit, I think, with the Lakers
because
he most likely won't be quite as open. But
sure, but that means he has the capability of hitting open threes, which the Lakers need.
Right.
Yeah,
and
that'd be helpful.
And like you said, Tom, I think he's a good basketball player, and the Lakers should do whatever they can to find good
basketball
players.
Lakers need good basketball players. Give the Lakers good basketball players.
It's a complicated plan, but they might just have to execute it.
It's crazy enough to work. all right, I guess I didn't really give my predictions. I think, aside from the names that we mentioned, I think those are about the bigger names, the biggest names that the Lakers have even a slight chance at. But I saw, and I'm not going to steal it this time because I had literally just read it, Amin Alhassan on ESPN, they did a 5x5 kind of thing where they asked five experts about the situation that the Lakers were in. Yes, experts. We did air quotes there. That's very well done.
Only God's an expert, Kenny.
But they asked these five quote unquote experts what they think of what you know the situation and how the offseason should play out. And like you said, Tom, and you alluded to as well, Harrison, Amin Alhassan said basically it's a slow burn, that they need to take their time and let these kids develop. And while Conley, I would love to see them make it work and all that, after that, you know, you look at a bunch of quality veterans who can come in and mentor the kids, not only on the court by being able to play alongside them, but then also off the court in teaching them what it takes to be successful in the NBA. And those are the kind of guys that we aren't going to hear, we aren't going to see, you know, Twitter isn't going to be trending by the Lakers signing Jared Dudley. That's not going to, you know, nothing like that is actually going to happen. But, you know, he's the kind of guy who, like Kevin Durant always looks back on and says Kevin Ollie was vital in his growth as a player. And who the heck, you know, aside from how good he's been as a coach in college, who the heck knew about Kevin Ollie while he was playing in Oklahoma City? And those are the kind of guys that the Lakers need to go after to see if they can teach these kids what it takes to win.
Kevin Ollie, hashtag future Laker.
He's going to come back. Maybe that
no,
would
but
get the
actually, that does that that almost kind of makes more of a case for Barnes, who by all accounts is a really solid guy, too, in addition right. to his playing style. Like, all of the media raves about how he's just kind of a real guy. Like, he doesn't go out and party a lot. Like he's a pretty solid dude in the locker room. So that the Lakers need some of those after last year. They need some solid, level-headed guys that are going to teach people good habits so that they're young, so that Brandon Ingram isn't rooming with Nick Young on the road.
Right, right. Anybody along those lines that you guys can think of off the top of your head? I mentioned Jared Dudley, and I think that
Jared
kind of
Jack just got cut today.
Do you think that would?
I don't know
that
he's the greatest fit because he's a point guard, but
right.
So you'd probably want like a wing in that role.
I heard that Kobe guy's available. I heard he might be.
Richard Jefferson, max him out.
Yes.
It's
yes.
free money under this cap.
Yes.
Jan Mahimi.
He looks spry in the finals, let me tell you.
Jan Mahimi, or Mahimi, man, I stink at this.
It's not, you just got go with it.
Yeah, you're good.
Like you're right.
He comes across as somebody who would fit that role for the front court, right, where he can actually do stuff on the court and then also provide, you know, the kind of leadership that you would hope that Julius Randle and whoever the Lakers wind up going after can make work.
And, like, depending on how the roster shakes out, Brandon Bass wouldn't be the worst guy to bring back as a backup five.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
Go ahead.
I'm not big on Bass at the five, but I also would like to advocate for lots of Tarik Black playing time this year. Hashtag free Tarik.
They extended his qualifying offer today. League sources confirmed.
He was good. I thought the Lakers were the best when he was on the court this year, but
he was. He was really good. I wouldn't be surprised if the stats actually spoke to what you're talking about.
Well, they did, but there was a lot of noise because it was at the end of games. But their net rating was. I think he actually might have had the best net rating on the team.
Yeah, I think it was him and Huertas.
Yeah, but,
the catalyst.
But it was amazing. I always thought when he was on the court, it's just like, hey, look what D'Angelo can do when you have a capable, strong, athletic big man that can set a screen, set a hard screen, roll to the hoop, catch the ball, and dunk it. It's amazing.
It's crazy how that
works
out.
That's why I think Biombo could be a decent fit, because people are talking about you can't throw the ball to him ever unless he's right under the hoop. That's all the Lakers need him to do, and if he's happy to do that, then like that's almost a better fit in Whiteside than Whiteside in some ways. I still think Whiteside's a way better player, but that's a better fit than Whiteside in some ways, in that it seems like he's not going to grouse about his role. It seems like he's totally happy to not embarrass himself by trying to post up and that kind of thing.
I thought he looked really good in that Cleveland series.
Yeah.
Is Biombo taller than Black? Because I thought I saw some stuff that Biombo's a little undersized.
Looking stuff up live on a podcast.
I mean, he's a really good guy. Yeah, so he's not much bigger than Black. Like, Black's listed 6'9", like, but I don't think Black's 6'9".
No, he's not. He's like 6'8". Yeah.
Not quite nice. All right, so let's go ahead and we'll put a wrap on this. Like I said, these are going to be coming out. I'm actually going to record another podcast here in another hour and a half or so with Kirk Henderson, who I mentioned a second ago. I'm sorry, Harrison. I'm podcast cheating on you.
All right, well, by the way, me and Tom are going to go have our own cool podcast with another cool guest by ourselves in an hour and a half. So we weren't available anyway.
We're going to upload it onto the feed without even telling you.
I was actually going to invite you, Harrison, but now that you're making your own cool podcast, I'm not going to. So there.
Yeah.
So this is how the podcast is going to end. Not just this episode, but that's it. Harrison and I are no longer working together. I am now looking for another co-host. Send me your resumes, and we'll go from there. This was a lot of fun, though. Tom, thank you very much for making time for us today. You can find Tom Fear. I'm actually going to say it properly this time. Tom Fear on Twitter at – oh, man, I got that right.
At TJF Sports.
There it is, at TJF Sports. for all kinds of standing for Andrew Wiggins over Brandon Ingram. Because that's the type of hard-hitting analysis that you need on Twitter when two guys.
I understand where that was coming from last night. That was the weirdest tangent that Lakers Twitter saw. I was like, why?
Oh. You know why? Like, duh.
No, because we're all biased. But
Then also, as always, I was Harrison Fagan that you heard. Thank you very much, Harrison, for joining, and it's been a pleasure working with you.
Yeah, I would say same, but you didn't introduce me at the beginning of the podcast, and I've been holding the grudge this whole time. So now people finally know who this voice was. So yes, I'm Harrison Fagan. You can find me on Twitter at HMFagan. And, you know, it was nice while it lasted with Anthony.
It's been great. It's been a great role. I am Anthony Irwin. You can find me at Anthony Irwin LA, and I look forward to talking to everybody except for Harrison from now on.